hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Day of the Caller podcast for the fourth day of September 2019. It's a Wednesday. If you're playing the home game or still use paper, I can't believe they still sell calendars. I'm Derek Hunter. I am here. Seriously, my wife buys one every year. My wife does a whole bunch of work on paper, and it's just it just creates a mess. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Stop buying calendars. Pretty simple request there. Lots of stuff to get to today. As always, you can email the show, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Compliments, complaints. I got a complaint about my daughter coming on the show yesterday. I get every time she's on the show, someone writes into it. I can't stand hearing that. I work at night. If the kid isn't sleeping or can't sleep or wakes up crying or whatever, my wife goes to work really, really early in the morning. So I have to bring the kid downstairs. I can either not do a show and play PJ Masks with her, or she can play in the background and occasionally come up and want to talk into the microphone. I think it's a small price to pay, considering there is no price to pay. So I can't stop it. I'm not going to stop it. Most emails I get think it's pretty cute. And it's not like it completely derails the show. Every medium on which you listen to this show has a fast-forward button that'll give you a 15 or 30-second skip into the future. So there's nothing I can do about it. Except not record a show. You want to build me a studio where I can lock out all the background noise, I'd be happy to accept your money. But until this actually brings in an income, it's me, a Mr. Microphone and iPad, and occasionally a two-year-old throwing a fit or pooping her diaper or laughing in the background and occasionally talking too closely to the microphone. Got a lot of stuff to get to. If you want to enter to win the signed James Hassan book, and I'm going to work on trying to get James to sign the other copy. I can't believe I always make sure they sign all the copies. And this time I didn't. So I have one signed copy to give away. Email me, Derek, at dailycaller.com. And so it is emailed, so it shall be done. Oh, boy, I got a lot of things I want to talk about today. I want to start with Hollywood, but before we get to that, we've got to welcome a new sponsor. It's an old sponsor, sort of, but it's a new sponsor to this program. It's Ancient Life Oil. I'm holding mine, shaking it in the you can't really hear liquid shake on a podcast, but it is CBD oil. You've heard about CBD oil. It's all the rage with athletes and weekend warriors everywhere. Look, I'm a firm believer that when you're healthy, you're happy. That's why I use CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com. It's a natural remedy made with nothing but the purest ingredients and blended with coconut and hemp oils. I'm telling you, it's a home run hitter for your health. I was a skeptic, but now I see why it's so popular. I feel better than ever. I've been using it for about a week. Ancient Life Oil is not psychoactive. It's not going to get you high. It provides you all the benefits without getting you high. I encourage you to do your own research. Just search CBD oil benefits for yourself. Find out why thousands of people have made CBD oil a regular part of their healthy routine. If you're ready to live your best life, go to ancientoil.com now, the trusted source for the highest quality CBD oil. Ancient, A-N-C-I-E-N-T, lifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. And use the promo code Derek for free shipping. They have a whole bunch of stuff there, and they have different flavors. I use the chocolate mint. I heard chocolate mint, and I've been doing the keto thing, and I'm like, ooh, no sugar and chocolate mint flavor? Sign me up. And yes, it's delicious, and it makes you feel so much better. CBD oil, look into it, check it out, and then go to ancientlifeoil.com and try it for yourself. Just see what other people are saying. Speaking of what other people are saying, we want to welcome them along with Life Change Tea. It's the same company, and thank you for that. They're with us. They believe in this show, and it's because of you guys. So thank you guys for that. It's awesome. It really, really is awesome. I'm looking at the Twitter machine the last few days, and I see this tweet from a guy called Eric McCormick. Now, if you don't know who Eric McCormick is, that's because you're his work sucks, honestly. If you look at their IMDb page of the two actors in the lead of Will and Grace, it's awful. It's terrible. They have, like, he was in the Lonesome Dove TV series, not the miniseries. The first Lonesome Dove was great. Eric McCormick was in the movie Alien Trespass. Did you ever see Alien? No, of course you didn't see Alien Trespass. He was in a movie called Here's to Life. Have you seen that movie? No, you haven't. How about Exception to the Rule? These are some of the bigger names. I'm picking at random here of his IMDb page. He's not a wildly successful actor except for one thing, one exception. Will and Grace, back in the 90s, became wildly popular. They made over 200 episodes. It goes into syndication. If you know anything about television, if you can get a sitcom to 100 episodes, well, you're set for life. If you're a producer, a principal, the creator, the writer, the lead, whatever, you're going to get mailbox money forever, because that's where they really get into serious syndication money. That's how Jerry Seinfeld ended up being a billionaire. It's just that Jerry Seinfeld happens to be a comic genius, and Eric McCormick happened to get cast as a gay guy. He's got this mailbox money. You look at his career, and he had to go back to the well. He had to go back to Will and Grace. They had to reboot it because the people involved with it weren't getting really any work anyplace else. Have you really ever seen the cast of Will and Grace anywhere else? Did anybody miss Will and Grace? I don't think so. It was edgy in the 90s because it had gay characters, and ooh, it was teaching about tolerance. And then gay characters were shoehorned into everything everywhere, even after the fact. You got J.K. Rowling saying, Dumbledore was gay. Like, okay, why didn't you write that into the script? Because who cares? It doesn't matter. Well, no, I'm just saying. I was woke even before I was, when I was sleeping. So Eric McCormick and Deborah Messing, who plays Grace on Will and Grace, who has an equally stellar career. I loved looking up these careers of these people. She was in McHale's Navy, the movie. Remember that huge box office success? She was also in Hollywood Ending, whatever the hell that is. Lucky You, whatever the hell that is. Like Sunday, Like Rain from 2014. Yeah, let's just say that neither one of these people are talents to be reckoned with. They both got incredibly lucky and got cast on a TV show on NBC at a time when Seinfeld and Friends were dominating. So sort of by proxy, they won. They hit the genetic lottery by accident. They are like Fredo Cuomo. He was just happened to be born into the right family. And then at the end, it ended up being the wrong family. But I don't want to spoil the Godfather trilogy for anybody. Well, Eric McCormick took to his Twitter page the other day, on August 30th, to be exact. He saw a tweet from the Hollywood Reporter about a story, because Hollywood Reporter covers stuff that's going on out in Hollywood. The Hollywood Reporter tweeted out, quote, President Donald Trump to appear at Beverly Hills fundraiser during Emmys week. And there's a link to the story, and there's a picture of Donald Trump. And you think, oh, well, whatever, just another story, who cares? There are conservatives out in Hollywood. There are quite a few of them. They're just not in positions of power. So this empowers the feeble-minded people whose IQ is smaller than their belt size to feel 10 feet tall and bulletproof. So Eric McCormick, Emmy-winning actor, tweeted that story out with the comment, quote, hey, Hollywood Reporter, kindly report on everyone attending this event so the rest of us can be clear about who we don't want to work with. Thanks. Well, there are a lot more people in Hollywood than just the actors. You wouldn't really know it based on the amount of media attention the whorish actors sort of gobble up and live off of. But it's true. There are, if you watch the credits in any movie, you see that, or any TV show, you see that there are thousands of people involved in the making of it. How many of the people on the set of the rebooted Will and Grace who happen to be conservatives, even if they don't support Donald Trump, how many of them do you think are sleeping easy tonight? That the tolerant Eric McCormick made it clear that you SOBs aren't welcome here. I want to go after you. I want to get you. I don't want you around me. Not to be outdone, because they are a pair of morons over on that show. His co-star tweeted pretty much the same thing. She tweeted to The Hollywood Reporter, quote, "Please print a list of all the attendees, please." Because, you see, actors aren't that bright. They don't know how to construct a sentence. "The public has a right to know." Yes, the public has a right to know. The Gestapo would very much like to see the list of the attendees of this thing so that we might make sure that none of them are ever seen again. So if you're a grip, if you're the craft service person, if you're one of the makeup people or the hair people on the set of Will and Grace, and you happen to think that open borders is a bad idea, that you liked the tax cut that you got, you don't really want to see it go the way of the dodo, or you happen to believe that a strong military is more important than the progressive social agenda, you go into work now knowing full well that you better keep your damn mouth shut. You better hope that nobody figures out that you are not a down-the-line liberal. And you better hope that anybody you might have accidentally let slip that you have some conservative tendencies doesn't then get mad at you and run to Eric McCormick or Deborah Messing and say, "You know, John over in Craft Services, I think he's a Trump supporter. He told me once that this country should not encourage illegal aliens to enter the country. He said that we need a strong, secured southern border." Well, it doesn't take much to connect the dots of what would happen next. You would have a producer come down and say, "Look, John, I appreciate it, but your sandwiches, your PB&J with the crust cut off, your ham is not honey glazed. And so we're going to have to go in a different direction with the catering." Or, you know, the boom operator, "You've got to get going." You see the terror that these people have inflicted upon their coworkers. I mean, they're not going to get cast in anything. They were in movies, the crap movies that they've made, some of which I read to you, and those, I mean, there, I would have read the big one if there was a big one in the list, but there isn't a big movie in their list, and they certainly weren't the star of their bigger movies, of the movies you might have heard of but still bombed at the box office. If they're on a movie during the hiatus of Will and Grace, odds are pretty good that they are the A-lister on that movie set. Now, they're a Z-lister in real Hollywood. They're on a rebooted sitcom, for God's sakes, and they haven't worked since the mid-2000s in any real capacity, but they got mailbox money, so the money that's mailed to you every month for your residuals, so they don't really care. But they're the biggest star on a movie if they happen to land a movie. They don't very often, but occasionally. So then that puts everybody on those sets on notice as well. "You'd better not say anything. Look, Eric McCormick will be down here in a minute to get his hair done. Just don't talk politics in front of him. Don't make any jokes in front of him. Don't say anything that could set him off. We need him on this movie, and if he doesn't like you, you're gone, because, well, we need him on this movie, and you're just the hair guy." It is, it harkens back to the best days of Hollywood, if you will, the worst days, of course. The glory days of the 40s and 50s were the horrible days of the Hollywood blacklist, when there actually were a bunch of communists infiltrating Hollywood, but people always gloss over that, just like the House on American Activities Committee and Joe McCarthy. They actually uncovered some communists in our government, Alger Hiss being one of them. Democratic hero. They insisted that Whitaker Chambers and the Pumpkin Papers, you got to... it's not important, but it's interesting. And if you're interested in history, I highly recommend finding out about Alger Hiss and Whitaker Chambers. But Alger Hiss was a progressive hero, an FDA acolyte, and a communist. And Whitaker Chambers, who was a former communist, outed him. This guy was in a high position in the State Department. And Alger Hiss denied it to his dying day. He denied it absolutely, totally, and completely. And the left bought into it. Alger Hiss ended up going to prison for perjury, not for spying. Well, it turns out that after the fall of the Soviet Union, when a bunch of documents were released a few years after the fall of the Soviet Union, Alger Hiss was, in fact, a communist helping the Soviet Union. Oopsie. To this day, there are liberals who deny that Alger Hiss was a communist who helped the Soviet Union. But the facts trip them up. Before we got the facts, they all still insisted there was no way. It was a hit job perpetrated by the evil right wing on Alger Hiss, who is a true patriotic American. Well, turns out not so much. So Deborah Messing and Eric McCormick are now putting everybody they work with and anybody in Hollywood they happen to encounter on notice that your name will be put on the list, und so für, but like a bird with you, to see what this wrong sink is. And people will be disappeared from sets if their politics are ever found out. Now, you can prance around the set at Will and Grace and call Donald Trump a Nazi six ways from Sunday, and you'll probably get an on-screen credit and an Emmy nomination for your troubles. But a dissenting view, the tolerant left, on the show that was supposed to preach tolerance, will not tolerate that. Well, there's been blowback to this, and Eric McCormick then went to his Instagram account to try and do some damage control, because when the feces hit the fan and you are the one who put the fan on high, everybody gets splattered. And bad PR for a nominally successful reboot that is struggling to maintain an audience really can't afford to alienate half the country. So Eric McCormick went to his Instagram account and posted the following, quote, "I want to be clear about my social media post from last week, which has been misinterpreted in a very upsetting way. I absolutely do not support blacklists or discrimination of any kind, as anyone who knows me would attest. I'd simply like to understand where Trump's major donations are coming from, which is a matter of public record. I am holding myself responsible for making educated and informed decisions that I can morally and ethically stand by, and to do that, transparency is essential." End quote. What you all just heard right there is grade A, knee deep, 100%, still steaming, it's so fresh, bullshit. All of this is public information. Then Eric McCormick, why didn't you just wait for the FEC filings, the Federal Election Commission filings, to then find out who attended that fundraiser? Why didn't you do that, Eric? Why didn't you just make a little mental note in your head? God knows there's room. Or in your calendar on your phone, in case the cranium is very thick and there isn't a whole bunch of room. And then check that out later. If you're trying to be responsible and educated and informed on your decision-making, Eric, why wouldn't you avail yourself of the tools available to all Americans to check out this information for yourself? Why then would you say, I want to know who these SOBs are so I know who I don't want to work with? That's the part of his tweet he less than skillfully ignores in his tweet there. You notice that? I want to know who these people are, so I don't want to work with them. What? I just want to be educated and be responsible and make decisions that I can morally and ethically stand by. And to do that, transparency is essential. Yes, like the transparency when you look through one ear on your head and see right out the other side, Eric. You lying fraud. Deborah Messing retweeted this, of course, saying that she agrees with it, and her co-star and friend, she's not going to put out her own statement because he did such a masterful job on it. This is what happens when the people, we the people, stand up to these little fascists and tell them to get bent. While they have mailbox money for the rest of their lives from their syndication, they crave attention. That's what actors do. They crave it. They need it. And if they think we're not going to get it, we're going to lose. If we don't have a TV show, we don't exist. Our movie careers are a joke. Our acting skills are suspect at best. This is all we've got in life. They suddenly start to try to backtrack. But in backtracking, they commit yet another lie, telling you this wasn't a bad, I would never agree with blacklists. We'll name it a different color. And we'll call it the I won't ever work with the red MAGA hat list. And make sure that those people are run out of Hollywood and destroyed. Yeah, it doesn't matter, translated from the original German or not, what they are advocating here is what the left has always been advocating. You are either with us or you are against us. It's typical of the left. Now, to her credit, this hasn't gone to this hasn't gone over very well, even with Hollywood leftists. Whoopi Goldberg, of all people. I mean, her rationale is a little self-serving, but what she says is absolutely true.
Your idea of who you don't want to work with is your personal business. Do not encourage people to print out lists, because the next list that comes out, your name will be on, and then people will be coming after you. In this country, people can vote for who they want to. That is one of the great rights of this country. You don't have to like it, but we don't go after people because we don't like who they voted for. We don't go after them that way. We can talk about issues and stuff, but we don't print out lists.
Whoopi's right. You know, Whoopi's right. Mostly. The idea that you don't print out lists because then somebody will come after you with a list is, it's not really the most principled stand ever. It should just be you don't print out lists because that's wrong. You don't blacklist people because that's wrong. Not because, well, then there might be a blacklist that you're on. But hey, you got to take the small victories where you can when it comes to these people in Hollywood and their hatred for people who aren't like them. Still, it's a good defense. It was right. It was accurate. She blasted these people, and they deserved to be blasted. They are corrupt, and the funny thing is, they really truly believe that they are the tolerant ones, that they have the high road, that they are the heroes. Of course, everybody's the hero in their own story, but they view the rest of the country as rubes, people who disagree with them, as rubes who need someone like them to think for them, quite frankly. I looked up it looks like Deborah Messing went to college, but she went to college for theater. And I can tell you, as somebody whose first year of college was spent as a theater major, the people in the theater department are not bright people. You're not really focusing on academics when you're majoring in theater. I was mostly focusing on chicks and getting drunk and play improv. Improv was my favorite thing. It doesn't look like Eric McCormick went to college. And then there's another celebrity who is out there fighting for you and demanding, while the cast of Will and Grace is demanding purity, Alyssa Milano is demanding your gratitude for all of her hard work in fighting for you. Now, you didn't ask her to fight for you. You don't want her to fight for you, and you don't want what she's fighting for, but none of that matters. she was on Who's the Boss and whatever that witch's show was, Charmed, I think. So therefore, she is our moral superior. Of course, lost in all of this is the fact that her husband was intimately involved in defending Harvey Weinstein for years through the firm that he works for, and I assume a chunk of her family's net worth comes from that, so she's trying to virtue signal and make up for that. She never talks about that. It's weird. But she took to her Twitter account and she tweeted the following, because she's out there calling Ted Cruz an idiot and wants to debate him on the Second Amendment. And my God, I would pay good money to watch Alyssa Milano talk to Ted Cruz and try to debate Ted Cruz on anything, but particularly something related to the Constitution. Because she didn't go to college. I doubt she really went to high school because she was on Who's the Boss. She was educated on the set, as much of an education as you can get on the set. Alyssa Milano tweeted out, quote, "I know some of you dislike me, but understand, I'm fighting for you too. That might not be free to be you. That you might be free to be you, that you might not have to work so hard to put food on the table, that you can control your own destiny free from distraction, that you can live, just live, with a little heart." Yes, Alyssa Milano's got your back, ladies and gentlemen. You don't even have to go to work tomorrow. And oh, forget it. Call the boss and say, "Yeah, you know what, boss, I'm not coming in. Alyssa Milano's got my back. I don't have to worry about anything. She's going to take care of everything." Of course, no. If you're waiting for Alyssa Milano to come along and save you, know that you are going to die alone and hungry and cold. But this is the mentality, not just of Alyssa Milano, but of the left. I'm fighting for you. Nobody asked you to fight for me. I don't need you to fight for me. What the left doesn't understand is that because they've spent so long trying to instill a specific mentality in people, and it's taken hold of almost half the country. If it ever gets a majority of the country and enough votes to win the Electoral College, we're really, really screwed. It is a system. They want people jealous. And they've done a hell of a job at instilling jealousy in people. Because people who are, you look at somebody living a fabulous life and you think, well, I would like to live like that. And then there are other people who are, and the politicians are out there on the left saying, you, the only reason you're not living like that is because the system is racist. The system is rigged against you. Don't bother trying. You're never going to get ahead. The system is rigged against you. You can't win at three card Monte at 3 o'clock in the morning in Times Square. The game is rigged. You're never going to win at three card Monte. So don't bother trying. That's what they tell people. Meanwhile, they produce reality show after reality show and movie after movie showing these people living these fabulous lives. And you think, well, what did they do to deserve that? Why can't I live like that? We're all subject to this to a certain degree. I happen to love the show Below Deck. It's on Bravo on Monday nights at 9 o'clock. I absolutely love it. It's a reality show about the crew on a luxury charter yacht in the Mediterranean or the Caribbean, depending on which season. This happens to be Below Deck Med right now. But I love it. I love the cast is entertaining because they're drunks and losers, and I just like watching it. And I watch this and I see this super yacht, this beautiful boat, and the food that they get made for them, and the way that they're just having fun and just sitting in the Mediterranean, riding around on jet skis and stuff. And I think, God, I wish I could afford that. It's like 200 grand for a week or something ridiculous like that. But I would love to do that. That would be awesome. And then I really think about it, and this is where I diverge from the sort of jealousy that they tried to instill. It seems like everything on Bravo is designed to make people jealous of other people and make people hate people with money. I look at it and I go, I wish when I was younger, before I was married and had kids, I wish I had done that yachty life. I had, you know, I'm growing up in Detroit. I don't know that yachting and working on luxury yachts is even an option. I don't know luxury yachts exist You know, my exposure to boats was reruns of Love Boat, for God's sakes. But I look at that and I think, God, I would love to have done that. And that's where the Democrats lose me. I don't want to punish the people, no matter how stupid they are, on that boat who happen to have a bunch of money to spend 5 days on a luxury yacht having their every whim catered to. I look at it and go, you know what? I was never going to be that guy to have that kind of money to set on fire, and I'm probably not going to know anybody who has that kind of money. But I would still like to have seen those places and done that stuff. So I would take a job on that boat. And that mentality that I have is common in this country, less common now, and Democrats are working to pretty much stamp it out. But the American people have not yet fully succumbed to this jealousy thing. You say, oh, Kanye and Beyonce are flying on private jets all over the world. And look, here's Leonardo DiCaprio banging this year's Victoria's Secret model or whatever. There are some people who look at that and say, that'd be pretty nice. That's a nice gig if you can get it. And then there are other people who look at it and hear the left and go, that should be me. It's not fair that it's them. It should be me. That is the Democratic Party. That is the mentality. Couple that with Alyssa Milano's, I've got more money than I know what to do with. I've got all the time in the world. She bragged on her podcast a couple of weeks ago about having had two abortions. She's happy, excited, ecstatic about having had two abortions. I don't know how sick you have to be to go, you know what, I had two abortions, and it was the best decision I ever made because I wasn't ready to have kids. Like, well, your kids were ready to be had, and now they're dead. Congratulations. I'm not sure I'd brag to the world about that one, but she looks at that, and she looks at the world from her perch, from her protected perch. And if you remember the wildfires out in California, Alyssa was one of those people scrambling. She tried desperately to find somebody to help her evacuate her horses because her property was in the path of the fire. And James Woods, who was active on Twitter at the time and is a conservative, was on Twitter and helped her and helped a whole bunch of people evacuate animals from inside the fire. She was ungrateful in the long run. But she looks at the rest of the world from her perch and says, they need me. They are incapable of taking care of themselves. They need someone like me who fell ass backwards into an acting gig when I was like 8 years old and then got rich off of it. They need me. I need to be their leader, so I will fight for you. See, no one was electing someone to fight for them. The people who swear and promise and tell you constantly that they're going to fight for you, they're all self-appointed. They all buy their own capes. They're not provided for them by the masses. They're just like, you know, the Al Sharptons. He's a civil rights leader. Well, when was that election held? It wasn't. He's a black leader, and that's all you need to know about it. Well, who said so? We did in the media. And that's it. We're done talking. He's a leader. Done and done. Well, Alyssa Milano is your champion. Don't worry about it. Don't think about it. Don't ask her to do anything. Don't argue with her. Be grateful to her. That's essentially what she's saying in this tweet. I'm fighting for you too, even though you disagree with me. You just don't know what's good for you. You're too freaking stupid to realize that the socialism that I am advocating and the government control over your lives is really in your best interest. She's talking to the country the way that I talk to my 2-year-old daughter. When I take something away from her, when I punish her for doing something like pushing her 11-month-old sister over or whatever, they don't see how condescending it is. They don't think it's condescending at all. They think they're actually doing something. And this really comes from a place inside them, a vacancy inside. Maybe it comes from her two abortions and she's just not, even though she publicly brags about it, she's probably got some subconscious guilt about it. Or maybe it comes from being wealthy and marrying wealth and just having so much time on her hands that she realizes that her impact on the world is really insignificant. She was on a sitcom in the 80s and a teen drama in the 90s. And what has she done since? I think she's doing some streaming show now. But in the grand scheme of things, would anybody ever list Alyssa Milano as their hero or as one of their favorite actresses or anything? Does she even come to mind when you think about actresses? Probably not. So when she sits around at night drinking her wine, silently crying herself to sleep, it has to haunt her. So she's likely trying to find meaning. And she found political advocacy. Not education, not curiosity. She's not open to hearing differing opinions. She found advocacy because she watches MSNBC. She has talked to politicians, liberal politicians only, and heard their side of the story. And she recognizes the moral superiority of government running the lives of people that the liberal elite have determined are incapable of doing it for themselves. This is not just about Alyssa Milano. This is about all of them, from the local city council Democrat who thinks that they know what's best for your life and they know how you should park and how you should do this and how you should do that and all the things that local governments regulate, up to every Democrat running for president. You may not want socialized medicine, but it's best for you, so you're just going to have to take it. It really is the mentality of the left through and through. Just keep in mind that Hollywood leftists and leftists everywhere hate you. They have, there was the personal assistant, the president of the United States, that got fired the other day. Remember her? She was out with some reporters and she was at dinner and drinking. And then she said some things she shouldn't have about the president. You can't disclose information about your job when you work for the president of the United States. You shouldn't be talking about stuff you shouldn't be talking about with anybody, let alone reporters. But this dinner was supposed to be off the record. It was supposed to be a safe space, if you will. Liberals love safe spaces. And this girl who worked for the president took the Democrats' word for it that she was at dinner with. Her name was Madeline Westerhout. She's 28 years old, and now she's fired because she said, "Oh, Donald Trump, I'm closer to Donald Trump than his daughters are." Things like that. Whole bunch of stuff. I'm sure you've heard about it. You can find out about it. It's irrelevant what she said. It's relevant as who she said it to. It was supposed to be off the record. It was supposed to be just a friendly dinner with some reporters. And, you know, they hang out. Washington, D.C. is completely incestuous. I don't know if people understand the extent to which all of these people are pals and friends and hang around. And so this 28-year-old girl who'd been in the administration since the start thought, oh, these people are just my friends. They're just pals. And one of these reporters at this dinner decided the off-the-record thing, which is supposed to be sacred to the journalist community as far as journalistic ethics go. They don't exist anymore. But it's supposed to be. You know, that's how you build trust with your sources. They tell you things off the record, and then you keep that off the record. You can pester them, please let me report this. And as long as they say no, if you agreed to keep it off the record, you don't get to report it. You don't get to tell anybody. It might as well be inside a confessional or inside a therapy session with a psychiatrist. It's supposed to be like that. Well, one of these journalists, likely, according to reports, one of them who works for the Washington Post, who the Post is now defending, I'm not going to give his name here, but he decided to tell people. And boom, next thing you know, it's in the paper. When I worked in the Senate, my first day, I was told a very important lesson, that never put anything in an email you don't want to see on the front page of the Washington Post the next day. It's that simple. The media, journalists, are not your friends, no matter how friendly with them you may be. And you can be pretty friendly with some of these people. And I can be friends with some of them. Some of them I do consider friends. I know a lot of them. Most of them I don't consider friends, but some of them I do consider friends. But even in a casual setting, off the record, we're just a couple of friends who've known each other for 15 years, having a chat. There are things that I will not talk to them about. There are subjects I won't even go down the rabbit hole on. I will just change the conversation. Why? Because people trust me with things. And there's a reason people trust people with things. They have a track record of being worthy of that trust. If you break that trust, well, then you probably won't get any more information. You won't be somebody's shoulder to lean on or ear to chew and seek advice. In the business and in this industry and in this town, the ability to keep a secret is paramount. Now, the journalist's job is to, their business is to find out those secrets. And the place that those two groups of people are supposed to meet is called Off the Record. But that some reporter, allegedly a seasoned journalist, decided, screw this 28-year-old girl, this little bit of information is just too juicy. It tells you everything you need to know about journalism today. They aren't your friends. They aren't, in fact, even indifferent toward your existence. They are your enemy if you are not of them. If you are not of the left, they will, at any moment where they think they can gain traction and either advance the liberal agenda or advance their careers or both, they will stab you in the back, they'll stab you in the front, they'll stab you in the side and throw you off a building. They will destroy you. They are not your friends. This girl discovered this the hard way. I don't know where she goes for work now. Certainly not anywhere in this town. Likely not for a while. She's going to have to let some time pass. The reporter will probably win an award for some of his other reporting, because that's the way the liberal media works. He'll get little high fives and congratulations notes from his fellow reporters, which will all be kept off the record, because that's the world that we live in now. But it's important. A lot of you send emails, so my son or my daughter is interested in politics, and I helped a couple people get at least interviews for internships. I can't get somebody hired, but I can get their help get them in front of the people who can hire them. They have to impress them. And you got to be careful. You got to tell these kids, look, they're going to be events. When you're fresh in town in D.C., one of the beautiful things about D.C., it's incredibly expensive. It's horribly expensive to live in. I don't recommend anybody do it because it sucks. Unless you're willing to live in a studio with like five people, most of your money is going to go towards room and board. That's why I lived in Baltimore for 13 years. So I didn't have to do that. I just had to risk being shot every day. But while you have to pay an exorbitant percentage of your income to keep a roof over your head, there are events just about every night where you can go out and eat and drink. If it's not a dinner, it's a lunch, and there'll be leftover food if it's at your place of business. I took so much food out of the Heritage Foundation, it was leftover from public events. It might as well have been my grocery store. I had Ziploc bags in my desk that I could bring home Subway sandwiches, and every once in a while there was something really good that I could bring home. But so you can eat for free. You can also drink for free. And while you're young, 22, just out of college, thinking that everybody is your friend and your pal, and you're just interested in meeting people and impressing people, you will come across reporters. And you can run into some of the most famous, political famous, people at events around D.C., depending on what the event is and how you manage to get invited or crash it and hear about it. You can run into the biggest name reporters, the biggest names on TV, because they all go to these same things too. And you're going to be tempted to try to impress them. And they will burn you. They will screw you over. There are a few that are good people. But even the ones that are decent people are journalists first. And they will screw you over. So just be on guard. I don't know how this girl managed to get this deep into an administration and not have somebody have that talk with her. But it's a lesson she's learned the hard way, and one she will never forget. Then you add the other gutter snipes in the media. This story broke yesterday. Bloomberg News had this story. Very proud of it, they were. A guy named Ben Penn, who is their senior reporter for labor and employment for Bloomberg. Oh, wow. He's a hero. Just ask him. The headline is, Trump labor aide quits after anti-Semitic Facebook posts surface. And you think, ooh, what did he write? Did he write something really nasty about Jews? Was he quoting Ilhan Omar? Was it worse than her? Because these outlets don't really like to report on Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, AOC. They don't like to report on liberal anti-Semitism, but they'll report on anti-Semitism if a Republican did it. And so you hear about this guy named Leif Olson, who wrote about Jews on Facebook, and what is it? And this reporter, he sent out his tweet with the word scoop in front of it, like, ooh, it's a big deal. It's a big old scoop that he's got. Then you look at the post itself. The post itself is innocuous. He goes back and forth, and he's actually mocking anti-Semitism. There isn't any ambiguity about it. There's too much to read in this back and forth, too, but it's been written up everywhere to give it justice. But it is clear that this guy is unequivocally mocking anti-Semitism. You would have to have recently suffered a severe closed head injury or be Joe Biden to not understand that that is what Leif Olson is doing, who apparently had just recently moved his family from Texas to Washington, D.C. for this job. Now, I love the way that this so-called reporter named Ben Penn reports this, as I got this scoop. I got this scoop. The Facebook, the anti-Semitic Facebook posts have surfaced. You know that isn't what happened. You know that a group like Media Matters or some other fascistic neo-Nazi group went through every Trump administration official's social media history and fed this to him. Here's a screen capture of it, Ben. It's anti-Semitism. He's talking about Jews protecting their own, Jewish media protecting their own, in a mockery of the anti-Semitism out there. But Ben Penn is too good to fact check, too good to read, too good to matter. He reached out to the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor did what everybody does, and it's a sad condemnation of the Department of Labor, too, that they asked for his resignation, and within 4 hours, he was out. He was done. And Ben Penn is very proud of himself, which is really disgusting. He said, I will point out that all I had to do was present Department of Labor with a screenshot of the post and request comment. And 4 hours later, I was told he resigned, not engaging with you any further, he said to a guy who pointed out how ridiculous it was. Then later in the day, he said, quote, lost in all of this is that Olson was part of a team of political appointees tasked with the heavy lift of drafting wage hour regulations that are a high priority for Trump White House and business community. Now they're down one advisor. So there he is, holding the scalp that he claimed with a complete and total fraudulent lie likely fed to him by the left-wing smear machine, and he's waving it in the wind as if it is a badge of honor for him. These people are not your friends. These people are not on your side. These people are your enemies. They will destroy you any chance they get, and then they will celebrate it. Don't be surprised when Ben Penn's office over at Bloomberg News starts to fill up with little placards with his name engraved on it for rewarding him for the wonderful bit of journalism he did in taking a sarcastic joke meant to mock anti-Semitism out of context and twisting it into a pretzel and getting a guy fired from his job. This would cause a normal human being to hang their head in shame. But we aren't dealing with normal human beings here. We're dealing with progressive leftists. It's agenda uber alles. They can stand cheerfully on the side of a political philosophy that racked up 100 million deaths in the last century. Not war-related deaths, deaths in the Soviet Union and Communist China. And they can stand on that pile and go, Yeah, you know, they just did it wrong. We can do it right. And they have that same mentality, whether it's one dead or 100 million dead. They don't care. The only thing they ask themselves is, was the agenda advanced? If it was, good. High fives all around. We'll call it a day and congratulate ourselves for our heroism behind the keyboard. Because they're all 10 feet tall and bulletproof behind a keyboard. But it is disgusting. And it should be an embarrassment to Ben Penn. And he deserves every bad thing that ever comes his way in life. And that he's out there bragging about it. Oh, look at what I did. I'm a real hero. Where's my cape? Where's my mask? The people need to know who I am. It is, by the way, it's a week since the New York Times, remember that big story, they were outraged that Trump supporters were combing through the social media posts of journalists and threatening to point out the racist and anti-Semitic comments that they've posted on Facebook themselves. This was harassment of journalists, and it was an attempt to bully the media, a threat to our very democracy. What a difference a week makes, isn't it? They engage in this gutter snipe type activity again and again and again. And then when you hold them to their own standards, oh, it's an outrage. How could you do this? Threat to democracy, threat to democracy. They all deserve everything bad that comes their way, and they deserve more bad things coming their way. All right, enough being angry. Let's talk about crazy, sniffy, creepy Uncle Joe Biden for a second. Remember when I told you the other day, might have been last week, I think it was last week, about Joe Biden making up that story about pinning the medal to the soldier. He took bits and pieces, the juicy bits, from three different stories and conflated them into one dramatic reading about, don't give me, I don't deserve it, I don't want the medal, he died, sir, he died. That thing, when he gave us, I give you my word as a Biden. And it wasn't true. None of it was true. He took a little piece from here, a little piece from there. It was like Joe Biden's head is a potluck dinner. Just whatever you got, throw it in there. If somebody will eat it, somebody will try it. And Joe will just spit it out randomly and add it in like an extra Lego piece onto something he's trying to build. And don't worry about where it came from. Well, Joe Biden was asked on the campaign trail about his difficulty with remembering and participating in reality. And his take was, well, it was novel, to say the least. It's not surprising for Uncle Joe. He when you construct your own reality, when you're living in a world like in that movie Inception, where somebody's just creating the world as it goes, it makes perfect sense what Joe Biden says here. But if you're a human being bound by the rules of physics, it doesn't. Let's listen to Joe.
I was making a point about a generation. That has nothing to do with the judgment of whether or not you send troops to war, the judgment of whether you bring someone home, the judgment of whether or not you decide on a health care policy.
Not judgment, but details. Because that's something I've heard from some voters, maybe not at your events, but details.
No, but the details are irrelevant in terms of decision making. If, in fact, I forget that it was Rodriguez, of all the times I've been in and out of Afghanistan and Iraq and Bosnia and Kosovo, as much as anybody, except maybe my deceased friend John McCain and maybe Lindsey Graham. And so the fact that I would forget that it was Rodriguez who was pinning, I believe this is the case, pinning a Bronze Star on a young man, it's irrelevant to the point. It's like saying I had this very bright reporter and I think her eyes were blue. What difference would it make about whether you were a bright reporter? Your eyes are brown. It's irrelevant, and you know it.
Details are irrelevant to the emotional story I was using to manipulate voters to make myself look good. Because that's the important detail that Sniffy Joe, who loves a Brett girl, that Sniffy Joe was omitting there. Joe Biden's story, as he told it, as it evolved over time and took the most dramatic moments from other stories, where there was a burning Humvee, fell down a ravine, shot, saved his life, he died, didn't want the medal, it was the Bronze Star, it was the Silver Star, it was this general, I was pinning it on him, the general was pinning it on him. each time Joe Biden told that story, Joe Biden became a more active participant in the story, moving him ever closer to the center of the action. And that's the problem. He was making the story about him by showing how enlightened he was, by showing how concerned he was. I was so concerned. I was very upset for this young man. He was going through hell, and I just wanted to be there to be a reassuring voice. And I'm demonstrating to you, audience members, that I am a leader who can handle these sorts of situations, these awful situations. I understand them more than my political opponents. I'm the real hero here. Keep that in mind. Of course, that's the problem with Joe's lies. That's the word being generous, embellishments. But I'm not going to be generous to Joe Biden because Joe Biden isn't generous to anybody else. They're lies. They were lies designed to make him look good, to steal valor by proxy, to put him in situations he was never in, to show that he has demonstrated true leadership when, in fact, he didn't. He wasn't in town that month. He wasn't there. It didn't happen the way that he said, when it wasn't even one story, it was three. It's not the fact that Joe exaggerated. It's much like the media in the age of Trump. All the stories that are wrong and retracted and corrected and pulled and embarrassed and whatever, they all went in one direction. There was not a single story that I can think of that has had to be retracted in this administration that either made the president look good or made the Democrats look bad right from the start. You know, they just reported this thing and said, oh, no, sorry, we got that wrong. Our bad. We're correcting it. You know, it was never Nancy Pelosi is caught stealing money in the cafeteria of the House of Representatives and kicking small children down stairwells during summer recess. There was never that story reported. It was always Donald Trump. We now have the smoking gun that Donald Trump is a tool of Vladimir Putin. And then a few hours later, after that's reported, oh, sorry about that. We were wrong. We were incapable of reading the date on an email and doing simple Google searches to find out the truth. We regret the error. That's how it has always gone when it comes to reporting on Donald Trump. By the way, none of the Trumpian type mistakes were made at all during the Obama administration. Isn't that weird? Do you remember a single story being retracted or a major correction where they reported that Barack Obama had done something horrible and awful and outrageous or unconstitutional or a power abuse or whatever? And then they said, oh, sorry about that. We got that wrong. We're going to have to pull that story down. No, you don't remember that because it didn't happen during the Obama administration. It only happened in one direction during the Trump administration. Well, Joe Biden is like the media during the Trump administration. All of his embellishments, all of his lies, all of his stories that he is found to be fraudulent on, all ended up putting him in a position where he wasn't, that made his involvement in whatever situation was going on much more impressive, much more important, much more leader-like sounding than they actually were. Now, maybe Joe Biden has some sort of mental disorder that requires him to make himself the more of a hero in his own story or whatever, but I think it's more that it's conscious. And he's lying. I don't think he was confused. I think he was complacent. I think he got used to the fact that he's not fact-checked. He's a Democrat. The media isn't really going to go after him at this. Now, they caught him. The Washington Post reported on this, but they did so in a way that they didn't use the word liar at all in the story, in the headline, in any way, shape, or form. It's just he had some false memories. It's just a false story. He mixed up some of the details. You know, that happens. No, it was a lie, because each time he told it, he became more important in the story. He became more integral in the story. He became the hero of the story. That's not by accident. That doesn't happen continually by accident. It's part of a pattern because it's part of his character. Ah, damn it, we're out of time already. All right, really quickly, this from the New York Post. Remember Ilhan Omar, America's favorite anti-Semite? Oh, she's probably going to, she could be the Democratic Party's vice presidential choice. New York Post, which broke the story of her alleged affair with the married lobbyist who her campaign was paying a fortune to. Well, it turns out her husband now wants a divorce, allegedly. The New York Post reports, Representative Ilhan Omar's marriage appears to be headed for the rocks. A longtime friend of the couple told the Post the congresswoman's husband, Ahmed Hirsiri, the source said, is poised to file for divorce after the revelation of a bombshell court filing that she was allegedly had an affair with a D.C. political consultant named Tim Minette. The Minnesota congresswoman and her husband allegedly separated in March, and Omar asked Hirsiri to divorce her around that time because she didn't want to file the papers. But Hirsiri refused, telling her that if she wanted a divorce, she should go do it herself, said the source, who has known both parties for 20 years. The husband allegedly changed his mind after Tim Minette's wife came out last week with the bombshell report that Ilhan Omar was the other woman in their marriage. Now, this is Ilhan Omar's second husband. This one is not her brother, or allegedly her brother, so this won't make the family reunion any more awkward than it already was going to be. So, I guess you gotta always look on the bright side of things, right? Yeah. I don't understand how anybody can vote for her. I don't know how you look at that and you go, hey, you know what? That's what I want represent. That's who we are. That's who we are. But who knew that Islam was so sexually empowering and liberating for women? We should send her as special envoy to the Middle East so that she can explain to all the radical terrorists out there whom she loves that they're doing it wrong. They really misinterpreted the Quran in a way that might diffuse a lot of the tensions over in the Middle East. But somehow, I doubt it. But again, at least the family reunion wasn't ruined by this divorce. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Spread the word. Send me emails at derek@dailycaller.com. Enter to win the signed James Hassan book that way. Have yourself a wonderful Wednesday. Don't forget, this Friday is the Sean Parnell interview. You're going to love it. Sean, it's a great interview. Order his book now, All Out War. It's excellent. I promise you that. The audio version is freaking amazing. And make sure to tell a friend. And we'll see you on Thursday. Good Lord. Oh, yeah, that's right. Tonight is the 7-hour slow Chinese water torture of the climate change town hall on CNN. We'll have as few of the highlights as humanly possible on the show tomorrow, because I don't want to make your lives any worse than they may already be just by the mere existence of 7 hours of Democrats complaining about the weather. We'll see you tomorrow.
I had this very bright reporter, and I think her eyes were blue.